Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, for today's deep dive, I want you to imagine a scenario. When scientists map out a genome and find a mutation that's clearly linked to a disease, the standard logical assumption has always been to just look for the gene sitting right next to it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has been the operational gold standard for prioritizing therapeutic targets for years now. Huh? You find the genomic signal, you blame the closest gene, and you just assume that physical proximity equals biological consequence.
Right, but what if that assumption is entirely wrong? Like, what if the mutation causing the problem isn't affecting the house right next door, but a house, I don't know, three blocks away?
Well, that changes everything. It completely shatters how we interpret the vast amounts of genetic data we've been collecting.
Which brings us to our focus today. Today, we celebrate the work of Wilson and colleagues who have advanced our understanding of genetic architecture in a massive way. Their 2025 paper in the American Journal of Human Genetics proves that linear physical proximity is often just a total illusion.
It really is a fundamental paradigm shift.
Yeah.
When we move away from that proximity assumption and start looking at functional connections, the entire map of human disease changes for you and me.
Okay, let's unpack this. To really grasp why this research is so critical, we have to look at the frustration inherent in standard genetic mapping. We have these massive genome-wide association studies, right? GWAS.
Right.
And they've found thousands of regions in our DNA linked to cardiometabolic diseases. But looking at standard GWAS data is kind of like staring at a giant confusing map of a city where the street signs are missing.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
We know something bad is happening in a general neighborhood, but we don't know exactly who is responsible.
And the core biological dilemma there, underlying that missing street map, is what we call the non-coding problem. When Nigidios identifies a genetic variant, you know, a mutation associated with the disease, over 90% of the time, that variant does not sit inside a protein coding sequence.
Oh, wow. Over 90%.
Yeah, over 90%. It doesn't break a protein structure directly.
Which means all these signals were basically sitting in the dark matter of the genome. They're in the non-coding regions acting as regulatory elements, so the enhancers, silencers, and promoters that turn the volume up or down on gene expression.
And that is a vastly more complex problem to solve. The challenge isn't just finding the variant, it's identifying the specific target gene that the regulatory element is actually controlling.
Right.
So to bridge that gap, researchers rely on EQTLs, or expression quantitative trait loci. These are the functional links between a genetic variant and the actual measurable abundance of an RNA transcript in a cell.
So if GWS gives us the general zip code of a problem, the EQTL gives us the exact street address of the gene whose expression is actually being altered.
Exactly. You're finding the precise address.
And for this deep dive, we're focusing on how the researchers specifically hunted for these EQTLs in human skeletal muscle. Now, for an audience tracking cardiometabolic diseases like diabetes, jumping straight to skeletal muscle might seem a bit like an indirect route. Usually the focus is heavily on pancreatic cells or fat tissue.
You'd think so. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, skeletal muscle is really the unsung hero or villain of metabolic homeostasis. I mean, it's not just a mechanical system for moving around. It is a massive metabolic sink.
Right, because of glucose disposal.
Exactly. The way your body clears sugar out of the blood after a meal is heavily dependent on skeletal muscle. In fact, muscle tissue accounts for roughly 80% of insulin-stimulated glucose uptake.
Wait, 80%?
Yeah, 80%. So when insulin binds to the receptors on a muscle cell, it triggers that signaling cascade that pulls the glucose inside, which means skeletal muscle is essentially ground zero for insulin resistance.
So if non-coding genetic variants disrupt the expression of genes involved in that specific cascade, the muscle just stops responding to insulin.
Right, and then glucose backs up into the bloodstream, triggering dyslipidemia, obesity, and eventually type 2 diabetes. You simply cannot map the genetic architecture of metabolic syndrome without mapping the regulatory landscape of skeletal muscle.
Okay, so we have our target tissue, and we know we need EQTLs to find the specific genes being regulated. But finding them in muscle tissue is notoriously difficult because the biological noise is deafening. So how did this team find the regulatory switches that previous studies completely missed?
Well, they bypassed the limitations of individual datasets by running a massive meta-analysis. They aggregated data from 1,002 individuals across two major well-characterized cohorts, the GTEx Consortium and the Fusion Study.
I want to push back on this for a second because I think you, the listener, might be wondering about the computational cost benefit here. If we already have a massive database like GTEx, which is practically the Bible for tissue-specific gene expression, why go through the trouble of mashing its raw data up with Fusion? What's the actual problem with just using one big data set?
It comes down to resolving linkage disequilibrium and finding what we call conditionally distinct signals. Basically, in any genomic region, multiple variants travel together. If you only rely on a cohort like GTEx on its own, you generally only see the loudest regulatory signal.
It looks like just one single mountain of association.
Exactly, like one big mountain. But gene regulation isn't just a simple on-off switch with one controller. Multiple different genetic variants can independently turn the volume up or down on the exact same gene.
Meaning you might have a primary mutation that increases a gene's expression by, say, 50%, and a completely independent secondary mutation nearby that decreases it by 10%.
Right. And to untangle that, they didn't just pull summary statistics. They used a sophisticated tool called APEX to process the individual level genetic data. Mathematically, what they do is identify the strongest primary EQTL signal and then condition the data on that variant, essentially holding its effect constant.
So they peel back the layers.
Yes. If there is still a statistically significant signal left over, they've uncovered a secondary independent regulatory switch. They just keep peeling back the layers until the background noise is flat.
And the sheer scale of what they uncovered by doing this is staggering. They analyzed over 24,000 genes in the muscle tissue and found 18,818 conditionally distinct signals for about 12,000 genes. And crucially, 35% of these genes had two or more distinct independent signals controlling them.
The gene SH3RF2 is a perfect illustration of why this methodology is so necessary. It plays a vital role in muscle homeostasis. Through the meta-analysis, the researchers isolated three entirely distinct regulatory signals for this one gene.
And if you look at the GTEx data alone, they only had the statistical power to find the first primary signal, right?
Exactly. GTEx found the first, Fusion alone only caught the second. You literally need that massive combined sample size of over 1,000 individuals to mathematically isolate all three independent switches over the biological noise.
Okay, so armed with these roughly 18,000 distinct regulatory signals, the researchers took the next critical step. They needed to connect these muscle-specific switches to actual diseases.
Right, so they matched them up against 26 different cardiometabolic traits from massive GWAS databases traits like body mass index, circulating lipid levels, and type 2 diabetes risk.
And they found 2,252 highly confident matches or colocalizations representing over 1,300 candidate genes. But the analysis of where these regulatory elements were located relative to the genes they controlled, this is where the study fundamentally rewrites the rules.
It really does.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Remember our hook at the start? That long-standing assumption that the closest gene to a mutation is the one causing the disease. When the researchers analyzed these 2,200 definitive disease to gene matches, only 37% of the colocalized signals actually corresponded to the closest protein coding gene.
The implication there is profound. I mean, more than 60% of the time, mapping a disease variant to its nearest neighbor leads you to the completely wrong target.
That's wild.
And even more striking, a staggering 44% of the colocalized signals were located over 50 kilobases away from the targeted gene. In the dense landscape of the genome, 50 kilobases is an immense distance. You're skipping over multiple other active genes.
There is a specific example in the paper that perfectly captures how crazy this is. They examined a well-known genetic variant linked to type 2 diabetes, RS7146599. If you look at this mutation on a linear genomic map, it sits physically right inside a gene called CARMEL3, and it's only 12 kilobases away from another gene called CPNE6.
Right, so based on traditional physical proximity mapping, any research team would look at that locus and assume the diabetes risk is mediated by either CARMEL3 or CPNE6. You design all your therapeutic interventions around those two.
But the EQTL proved that is entirely wrong. The variant doesn't regulate either of them. It actually controls a gene called PCK2, which is 36 kilobases away. In fact, PCK2 is only the fourth closest gene to the mutation. That is like blaming the guy standing right next to a broken window when it was actually someone three houses down the block holding a slingshot. Physical proximity is just a total illusion here.
That's a phenomenal way to visualize it, and it really comes down to the mechanics of how DNA is organized inside the nucleus. We often think of DNA as a straight, rigid line, but it's dynamically folded into complex three-dimensional structures, you know, chromatin looping.
Right, the DNA is tethered and looped.
Precisely. Because of this 3D architecture, an enhancer element that is 50 kilobases away in linear sequence can be physically brought within nanometers of a target gene's promoter. That 3D proximity is what matters for transcription, and linear distance tells you almost nothing about it.
And this is exactly why you need to care about this. The stakes here are astronomical for drug development. If a pharmaceutical company designs a therapy targeting CARMEL3 because it's the linear closest gene, they're pouring billions of dollars into a completely irrelevant target.
Exactly. It firmly establishes that functional genomic data measuring the actual transcriptomic output must supersede simple proximity mapping.
So if linear distance is an illusion, how do we track down the complete picture of a complex disease like type 2 diabetes? We have to zoom out from the skeletal muscle and realize the body is a fully integrated system, right?
Absolutely. Metabolic syndrome isn't just a muscle problem or just a fat problem. It happens across the entire physiological network, which led the researchers to do a cross-tissue analysis. They took known type 2 diabetes signals and tested them across four distinct tissues: skeletal muscle, subcutaneous fat, liver, and pancreatic islets.
Cross-tissue sleuthing. And this completely validates the systemic approach, because by testing all four tissues rather than relying on just one, they found 50% more signals.
Yeah, they successfully colocalized over 300 diabetes signals. And even more revealing, they identified 9 unique genes that hit across all four tissues simultaneously. Genes like HSPA4 and HMBS.
Which means the variant is systemically altering gene expression across the entire body. But computing overlaps in a database is only half the battle. They took this a crucial step further to prove causality in the lab, focusing on one specific variant linked to a gene called INHBB.
Right. INHBB is highly relevant to metabolism because it influences skeletal muscle mass and weight loss. The computational data suggested that the risk allele for this variant increased expression of INHBB in both skeletal muscle and fat tissue.
Wait, so a single regulatory variant can operate differently in a fat cell versus a muscle cell, or does it do the exact same thing everywhere? I mean, the cellular environments are totally different.
What's fascinating here is that, yes, the epigenetic landscape varies wildly between cell types. A variant might be a powerful enhancer in a muscle cell, but completely silent in a liver cell. So to see exactly how this INHBB variant functioned, the team moved to functional validation using luciferase reporter assays in actual human cell lines.
So they put the specific enhancer region into living human myoblasts and adipocytes and measured the actual transcriptional output.
And the results were the functional smoking gun. The risk allele drove significantly higher transcriptional activity in both distinct cell environments. Specifically, it resulted in a 2.5-fold increase in promoter activity in the myoblasts and a 2-fold increase in the adipocytes.
So the risk variant is basically double-teaming the body to drive the cardiometabolic risk. It cranks up the volume in both tissues.
It perfectly bridges the gap from statistical correlation to verified functional causality in human cells. We now have concrete proof.
And considering INHBB is already being investigated by pharmaceutical companies, proving this dual tissue mechanism in diabetes opens up massive new avenues for precision therapeutics.
It is a remarkable finding. However, as robust as this meta-analysis is, the researchers are very clear about the limitations. The foundational data from GTEx and Fusion relies overwhelmingly on individuals of European ancestry.
Right?
We are likely missing crucial regulatory variants, and we desperately need more diverse global data sets.
It's a critical reminder that our insights are entirely bounded by the diversity of the populations we choose to sequence.
Furthermore, they looked at bulk skeletal muscle tissue, which averages the signal across different cell types. The next frontier will definitely require single-cell EQTL mapping to get that granular resolution.
So, to summarize the central insight of this deep dive, the genetic architecture of human disease is not a simple linear instruction manual. Proximity on a strand of DNA is not destiny, and understanding complex diseases requires looking at functional connections across multiple tissues at once.
Precisely. We now possess a highly confident map of candidate genes that would have remained totally hidden if we had relied solely on the assumption of the closest gene.
So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. If a single non-coding genetic variant can remotely control multiple different genes, skipping over closer targets, and exert its influence across completely different organs, like your muscle and your fat at the exact same time, how much of our traditional one gene, one disease medical thinking needs to be completely thrown out the window?
It's a huge question. We are just beginning to appreciate the true complexity of the system, but we finally have the tools to navigate it.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Under data heat, we trace the sparks that genes ignite, turning quiet code to motion and might. Step by step, we clear the haze, separate the echoes, name the rays where variants hide in plain sight. Seems we pull the thread through stitched up dreams. Hear it signal in the muscle light. One small change can shift the whole. Made where the cells can see, a clue that bends what we're meant to be. Hear it signal in the muscle light. Code is numbers turning warm and right. From lifted strands to a clearer view. Gene by gene, we're building something new. Bye.